Okay, good evening. Welcome to the first of the series that we have on Hilchos Yichud. We're going to start with Hilchos Yichud for a few weeks. We'll see how many weeks it will take, and then we'll see where we go after that. Yichud is an interesting topic only because it's relevant to every single person at every stage of their lives. Little children, bigger children, adults, young adults, old adults, it just manifests itself in lots of different ways. We're going to talk about a lot of the different ways that it manifests itself. Especially appropriate when you're in school, when you're in the workforce, when you're in a profession that involves working with people individually. But I want to give just for 2 minutes a little more of a hashkafic introduction to the halachas of Yichud. This past week's parsha, as we got the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of, I don't know if he commanded us, or maybe it's better that he chose us, by saying, Atem tiyuli mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. You have to be a mamleches kohanim. What does it mean to be a goy kadosh? Goy kadosh, so where do we find the word kadosh? Mitzvah, there's a mitzvah of kadoshim tiyu. Mitzvah of kadoshim tiyu, Rashi says, kadoshim tiyu, you have to be holy. What does it mean to be holy? How do I be holy? This past Shabbos we talked about ways of, you know, getting inspired with chemical help. That's not being holy. I was once in a Kiruv program during the summer in Moodus, Connecticut, summer heritage seminars. And there was a fellow, actually from Baltimore, but he lived in the mountains outside of Baltimore. And this was his first experience in a religious environment, religious of any religion. It ended up that he wasn't Jewish. We only found out after the summer. But at that point, we thought he was Jewish. And this is his first, he was very into the religious thing. And I remember when he came, he said, you know, in my high school where I come from, spirituality means you listen to weird music and you get high. And our idea of kadosh is very different than that. What is kadosh? Kadosh means, Rashi says, shetihyu prushim min ha'arayos. To distance oneself from immorality, to distance oneself from sexual immorality. That's the definition of the word kadosh. I mean, the definition is really to separate oneself, to elevate oneself is probably a better word. But specifically from the area of arayos. One way to look at the halachas of Yichud and the things that circulate around that prohibition is that it's a restriction, it's a constriction. I think a different way that might be better for us to look at it, that will be more meaningful and more, we could appreciate it more, is that it's something that elevates us. All the inyanim of Kedusha that you find in Yahadus relates to elevating something. You make kiddush on wine, kiddushin, marriage is something that elevates something, and the inyan of Yichud, when we talk about the halachas of Yichud, that's something that really elevates us as a people we just work with a different plane than others. Besides the fact that the laws of Yichud elevate us, there's another important idea, which is the more obvious, is that it preempts a lot of problems that could, you know, that could come out otherwise. There's an important perspective on mitzvos that the Gra writes. He comments on one of the Mishnayos in Avos, and he says that when a person is placed in a nisayon, in a moment of temptation, in a moment of test, we don't have the inner strength necessarily to overcome nisyonos that we're already in. And in fact, we're not expected to overcome nisyonos once we are within a nisayon itself. What's the expectation of us? The expectation is not to get into that nisayon. To put ourselves in a lifestyle, in circumstances, that we're not going to be tempted, that we're not going to be in situations that we're going to have to deal with the tensions that might arise. I mean, the greatest example is just if you're walking out the edge of take the A train to work, the one train to work. So if you walk at the edge of the tracks, there's a danger you'll fall in. If you walk at the edge of a cliff, there's a danger that you fall off the cliff. So the goal is not to walk at the edge and then say, I'm going to be very careful, I'll keep my eyes open, I'll watch my step, and I won't fall in. If you realize that there's an imminent danger, you stay away. So that's something on a more practical level that the Torah sensitizes us to when it comes to the inyanim of arayos. Fine, let's begin. What is Yichud? If I have to define Yichud in one sentence, it's seclusion of a man and a woman. I didn't say the word locked in a room. I didn't say the word inside together. The word seclusion is good because it means that you don't necessarily have to be inside a room. You could have a case of yichud. If there's a man and a woman in an open field, and there's no one around, that's complete yichud. If you're in a gigantic open area in a forest, that's yichud if there's no one else around, even if it's in the middle of the day. We're going to find a lot of applications, but just one interesting point that you might be familiar with without even realizing it. Did anyone here go to the seminary Tomer Devora? Nobody. Ah, shucks. Okay, you've heard the phrase Tomer Devora. Devora is palm tree. Devora was a shofetes for Klal Yisrael. Where did she judge Bnei Yisrael? Underneath the palm tree. What's the big deal? Why does the pasuk have to say that she did it under a palm tree? Say, Lishkas, her office of Devora, say, the tree of Devora. Why does the pasuk have to specify that it was a Tomer, it was a palm tree? And the answer is, I saw in a Sefer Torah HaYichud, specifically under a palm tree. If you've seen palm trees, you notice that they don't have branches all throughout the height of the tree. They're only branches coming from the top. So she sat on the bottom, all the way on top, her branches over her, open area around her. Devora, who is the greatest, leader in terms of a woman leader that Bnei Yisrael has had among them, she was a Neviah, even she, Tzadekes Kemura, she was a judge, she was a public figure, and nevertheless, she made sure that the situations that she found herself was under a Tomer, an open air, even though it was open, that's why Tomer Devora was specified. Okay. Now, on whom is the prohibition of Yichud? Is it on the man? Is it on the woman? The answer is, it's on both. Both the men and the women are subject to the Isser of Yichud. And let's try to give a little bit of a history in terms of the history of the prohibition. First of all, is Yichud Midorais or Midorabanan? Any ideas? Choice A or B? Drabanan. Why would it be Drabanan? It's a gather, 100%. Like all gathers that we have. We have a gather, I can't use a pencil because I might come to write. I can't play a guitar because I might come to fix it on Shabbos. So I can't enter Yichud because it might lead to something more than that. You're 100% incorrect, Atara. I'm sorry.
Incorrect.
Yes. Yichud is Midoraisa. We'll see there are applications of the Rabbanan, we'll get there in a moment, but Yichud is Daraisa. The Gemara in numerous places in Sanhedrin and Avodah Zarah quotes a pasuk.
A pasuk that's not even speaking about Yichud, it's not speaking about
anything to do with Gilei Arayos, it's not speaking to do anything about that kind of moral or immoral behavior. It's speaking about Avodah Zarah. And one of the terrible things about people who do Avodah Zarah is that they might not do it on their own, they might tempt others to do it as well. And the Torah says that you can't have any pity on somebody who tries to seduce you to do Avodah Zarah. Listen to a pasuk again, nothing to do with our topic, essentially, but this pasuk is going to be the source in the Torah for the Isser of Yichud Mida Araisa. Says the pasuk in Dvarim Yud Gimel Pasuk Zayin, Ki yisitcha achicha. It will come a time that your brother might try to seduce you to do Avodah Zarah. Ben imecha, he'll either be your brother from your mother's side, ovincha, or maybe your son will seduce you, obitcha, or your daughter might seduce you to do Avodah Zarah. O eshet chekecha, your wife might seduce you to do Avodah Zarah. O reyecha, asher knafshecha, somebody else who's with whom you're very close. Where would they try to do this? Obviously, baseter, in secret, because they don't want other people to find out that they're convincing you to do Avodah Zarah. Leimor is saying the following, Nelcha, let's go. V'na'avda Elohim Achirim. And we'll go serve some idols, etc., etc., etc. The Torah says, don't listen to him. Such a person is Chayav Mita. Now, from the fact that the Torah assumes that you're going to be having this conversation, Beseter, and the Torah says that when you have if this conversation ever comes up, in secret, privately, you and the other person, one-on-one, don't listen to them, don't do as they tell you. That means the Torah is assuming that you're allowed to be with that person one-on-one. It's just adding, the Torah is just adding, when you're with that person one-on-one, don't listen to them when they suggest that you commit Avodah Zarah together. So let's see who's in this pasuk. That the Torah itself assumes that you're allowed to, that you assumes that you're going to be together. Your brother or sister, your son, your daughter, your wife. Those are the people with whom the Torah assumes that you could be together with, privately, secretly, beseter, as the pasuk says. Yes. What? Dvarim Yud Gimel, pasuk Zayin. From here deduces the Gemara that all other arayos, and we'll mention what that means in a moment, all other people whom the Torah prescribes as off limits to marry, to live with, in an intimate way, are going to be prohibited. I'll say that in a different way. From the fact that the Torah says these people that we assume you can be beseter with, you can be in a private secret place with, from here we deduce that all other people who are not listed in this pasuk, we are prohibited from being beseter with. This is the source in the Torah for Yichud Midah Araisa. However, we have limits to this. Since we only mention that these are the family members, the only people that are off limits that we deduce, since these people you're permitted to be beseter with, everybody else you're not, who's the everybody else that you're not allowed to be in private with? Everybody else are other family kinds of situations, what we call arayot, which are the classical sexual immorality kinds of people that the Torah prescribes. Those are off limits. What are the list of arayot? That's a pasuk, and those are actually not a pasuk, it's a whole chapter that we read on Yom Kippur. And Achrei Mos, towards the middle or end of Achrei Mos, we have a whole list of Ervas Avicha Ervas Simcha Lo Tegaleh, Ervas Eshes Avicha Lo Tegaleh, Ervas Achoscha Avas Avicha Lo Tegaleh, Ervas Bas Mincha Avas Bitcha Lo Tegaleh, Ervas Bat Eshet Avicha Lo Tegaleh, Ervas Echos Avicha. Okay, so who are these? Which kind of people are on this list that are not the cases of your brother, your son, your daughter, your mother that the Torah does allow to be beseter? Who are all these people? They're people like your aunt. They're people like your sister-in-law. Again, talking for a man, and the inverse would be the other way. Your brother-in-law, your sister-in-law, your daughter-in-law, your father-in-law, your mother-in-law. All those cases, etc., are going to be usher to have yichud with mida araisa. So that's the first step in the history of yichud. It's a pasuk in Dvarim. The second step was based on a story in Shmuel Beis. In Shmuel Beis, you know the story of Amnon and Tamar. David HaMelech had a son, Amnon. He had a son named Avshalom. Avshalom had a sister named Tamar. But Tamar came from a different wife at a different time, and she was originally not Jewish, and then she converted. So theoretically, Amnon, one son of David, and Tamar, a different daughter of David, were not really related, and theoretically could have married one another. But the story goes that Amnon was lovesick for his, not really half-sister, because he wasn't half-sister, but for his sort of half-step, something or other sister, Tamar. And his friend noticed that he was down, and he was sad, and he looked sickly and pale, and he said, Amnon, what's wrong? And Amnon replies, well, I'm lovesick for Tamar, but that's what my problem is. So his friend, I think Yundav, I don't remember it is, suggests, I have an idea. Why don't you feign illness, pretend that you're sick, and Daddy, David HaMelech, will come check on you, see what's wrong, and you'll tell him that you need somebody to help you, to serve you while you're sick, to make livivot, that's our modern word for pancakes, for you, and she'll make you livivot, and while she's there, you'll take advantage of her. That's exactly what happens. Amnon pretends he's sick. David HaMelech says, oh my dear Amnon, what's wrong? You don't look well. He says, yeah, oh my gosh, I need pancakes, I'm going to die. So David says, okay, sure, we'll make pancakes. No, I need Tamar to make me pancakes. Fine, we'll get Tamar to make you pancakes. And Tamar comes in, a good sister, half-sister, something-in-law, and makes pancakes for her half-brother, step-something-or-other, Amnon. Lo and behold, one thing goes to the next, and Amnon forces Tamar to be with him against her will. And she even screams, if you just ask David HaMelech, he'll let us marry one another, because they would have been permitted to marry one another. And nonetheless, Amnon takes advantage of her in that situation, and she goes out crying, having been taken advantage of. On that story, I'm sorry, one last postscript, Avshalom, 2 years later, kills Amnon, his brother, his whatever brother, to revenge Amnon's rape of Avshalom's sister, Tamar. So either way, obviously it wasn't a good thing for Malchus Beis David to have a daughter taken advantage of, to have a son killed because of it. It wasn't good. Says the Gemara, I think it's in Sanhedrin, Chaf Beis, or it's in Avodah Zarah, Lamed Vav. Ba'osa Shah Amru. At that time, they said, Look at what happened. Livnos melachim kach. If this is what happened to a princess, to a daughter of the king, livnos hedyotos al achas kama v'kama. To the daughter of a regular person, of a plebeian, all the more so, imagine what could be. Im litznuos kach. If it could occur something like this to a tznua, like Tamar, who didn't want it, who wasn't interested, look what happened. Leprutzos al achas kam v'kama. To a promiscuous people, all the more so, imagine what could happen. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, says Rav Yehuda, Ba'osa Shah, at that moment, Gazru, they made a Gzera D'Rabbanan, Al Yichud D'Penuya, on the Yichud of a single, unmarried, not Arayos person. So now we have two stages. The Pasuk said all the Arayos, having Yichud with people, your family members that you're not permitted to marry, that's Midaraisa. But a single person, a single girl with a man, who's not her brother-in-law, and they're not sisters-in-law, not daughters-in-law, they're not uncles, they're not aunts, just a regular girl and a regular guy, that would be, according to the Midaraisa, that would be Mutar Midaraisa. Comes this story with Amnon and Tamar, and the Bezdin of David HaMelech makes the Gzeira D'Rabbanan, that it's Aser, even though she's a Penuya, she's not one of the Arayos, she's not related to them in any way, she's not prohibited to marry, they're allowed to get married. But because of this story, we prohibited Yichud not to have such terrible occurrences happen. That's step two. There was one final stage in history after this Gzera, yes? Therefore it's Drabbanan. It was a Gzera that was made at that time by the Bezdin of David HaMelech, which is interesting because it's a higher level Drabbanan because it happened so early. It wasn't like a Din Drabbanan that happened in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. It was all as early as the time of David HaMelech. So it would be a high-level Darabanan. But nevertheless, it's after Chumash, so it's not going to be Midaraisa.
And who was the Gens of that
day? Single women. Single guy and a single woman.
Anyone.
It's not like they're not allowed to marry each other. The Torah only says that somebody who you're not allowed to marry, don't have Yichud with, because if you have Yichud with somebody you're not allowed to marry, you might end up doing something wrong with somebody you're not allowed to. But hey, if it's a single person, a single guy and a single girl, what's so terrible if something happens? They're allowed to be together anyway, in a certain sense, Midaraisa. So for that, we had this Gezerah that added on the situation of a single man and a single woman. Finally, the third stage. Third stage was nothing dramatic, just the Gemara records that Talmidei Hillel and Shammai made another Gezerah prohibiting Yichud with a Goya, a Jewish person with a non-Jewish person. Now that wasn't included in the Isra of the Torah. The Torah only said you're not allowed to marry, you're not allowed to have Yichud with one of the Arayos, and a non-Jewish person is not one of those. The Gzera of David HaMelech that we just learned about a minute ago was only single people, but that was talking about Jews. There's a third stage in history prohibiting even Yichud with somebody who's not Jewish. So now are there any questions about what we did so far? Yes. It doesn't, we don't have a story. The Gemara doesn't give us a story. No excitement, sorry. Just is what it is. I'm sure there might have been something that precipitated it at that time. Maybe there's stuff happening with Jews and non-Jews that Chazal weren't happy with. You could do some research, you know, history research. I don't know. The Gemara doesn't record anything. So let's take one at a time. Let's talk about the Isser Midaraisa. We said that the Isser Midaraisa only includes a man who's not allowed to marry a certain woman, having Yichud with her. Now, we didn't just say any person who you can't marry. We said those lists of Arayot. Those lists of what we, you know, the classical sexual immorality people, like all the in-laws and the aunts and the relatives, sister, mother, daughter. But of course, it can't be that your sister or your mother or your daughter is prohibited, because that we saw in the Pasuk earlier is assumed that you could be secretly with them. So your sister, your mother, your daughter, you are going to be secretly with them, but all the other relatives is going to be Aser Midaraisa. Let's talk about what this Aser Midaraisa is. Let me present to you a question. Something that we sort of hinted to earlier, but maybe we'll apply it one step further now. Is the Aser of Yichud an Isser into in and of itself? I mean, the Torah says you can't be have yichud. Not because it could lead to anything else, not because something bad will come out of it, because yichud itself is not allowed. Without any rationale, without any steps that it's leading towards something. Or do we say that yichud is only, like somebody mentioned before, it's only like a gzeira. It's only like something that leads to, it's a fence that prevents me from coming to something worse. What is it? Is there any time that we see in the Torah that the Torah itself tells us to avoid something so that we don't come to something worse? Again, not the Rabbanim. Rabbanims, we have all the Rabbanims all over the place, always tell us, don't do this, they don't come to that. Don't do this, they don't come to that. Is there anywhere a place where the Torah itself tells you don't do X, so you don't come to a worse Y? I'll give you a hint. Yeah, yeah? Excellent, okay. But that's less explicit. That's Chazal say that, yeah?
Oh,
yeah?
I
was thinking of that also, but it's not explicit. I was thinking about that, yeah, okay. Ooh, I didn't think of that. You're saying the fence on the roof, that's a fence in the very physical sense, not a fence in the halachic sense. I didn't think of that. That's good. I'll give you a hint. Yeah, yeah? Well, there it's that you can't lie. The lying itself is presumably the prohibition. Unless you assume there's some opinions hold that lying is only prohibited midaraisa if it's going to lead to stealing. So if that would be the case, you'd be right. I'll give you, my hint is grapes. Grapes. No? What? What? Yes? What? A Nazir can't eat grapes. A Nazir is not allowed to enter a place where grapes grow, a vineyard. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Why? Because he's not allowed to eat, drink wine. So the Torah itself makes a gather, makes a fence around itself. Something that you find practically nowhere. Practically nowhere. That's what all of you thought before. Since yichud sounds like a gather, sounds like a fence, so it must be derabbanan. Here I gave you at least one example of an explicit pasuk that a nazir can't eat grapes. The Torah says can't eat grapes. Why? Because the Torah is really concerned that a nazir might come to drink wine. Similarly, yichud is an example of a gather. We're worried about it coming to something further, but this gather, the Torah itself prescribes. Okay, let's start talking about some parameters of the halachas of yichud. First of all, does it apply? I mean, I'm asking rhetorical questions, you don't have to answer, but just going to make a point that's important to make. I know that I could be in this situation, and I know myself well, and I know the person with whom I'm going to be secluded with well, and I could guarantee you, I'd bet my bottom dollar that nothing would ever happen. Nothing ever will come out of this. I'm positive, I'm sure, I know me, I know she, nothing's going to happen. Does that make yichud mutter? Or the other person is so ghastly ugly, or I'm so ghastly ugly, that certainly nothing will ever happen. Or the other person is so old, or the other person is, or I'm so old, or whatever the situation is, could we say that since it's not going to end up that anything's going to happen between the two of us, therefore yichud would be mutter? Of course, that is not correct. Yichud is a situation, is the Torah tells us that the situation where a man and a woman are secluded together in a way that it's possible that something could happen, even though these two people might have no reason or no, nothing's ever going to happen in a million years, even if a Navi would come and tell us, I hereby tell you, in the name of God, that nothing will happen between you and she when you go into a room, or she and he when they enter a room, yichud will still be aser. That's an important, it's obvious, but it's important. Because the situation, regardless of who's involved, the situation itself is what the Torah prohibited. And here we have something that's a little bit unusual. Because usually, if let's say we talk about something that's immoral, something that's inappropriate, it's usually that I enter a situation. I entered a relationship that's inappropriate. I did something. I caused something. Let's say I'm standing in an elevator. Let's not talk about an elevator. Let's say I'm standing in the doctor's office. And it's late at night, and no one else is there, no one else is coming in, and the front door is locked. We'll talk about all those things in future shiurim. And again, no one else is in the room, and the nurse comes in. She's not looking at me. She comes in, goes straight to the cabinet, takes out some blood samples and some syringes and whatever it is for some other patient in some other room. Right now, I know that even if I don't, whether or not I know that there are other, let's assume I know there's no one else in the office. I was just standing there, I don't know, I was just weighing myself. And she comes in, she's not looking at me, we're not talking to each other. I don't know who she is. She's a new nurse, I never saw her before. That's yichud. I didn't do anything. I was caused to be in a situation, I was placed in a situation by somebody else, even though there was no interaction between me and somebody else. So now that I'm in this situation of yichud, I have a responsibility to extricate myself from that situation that I didn't even enter. Forget willingly, I didn't even enter whatsoever. Yes? Let's say the outside door was locked. Right, she got in because the outside door was locked. Yes? Yes, that is going to be a big discussion that we're going to hopefully have in future weeks. How does all this apply in professional settings with doctor's offices for therapists and speech pathologists and OTs and PTs and all that? Some of you might know some. Yeah. I could prove to you that yichud is usur even if there's no interactions between the two people whatsoever. Again, you don't speak to him, he's not speaking to you. You're not looking at him, he's not looking at you. Yichud could still be usur. How do I know that? Because yichud applies even when people are sleeping. If I fall asleep in one room, and whatever the situation occurs, somebody else, a woman, is sleeping in the same apartment or whatever it is, and there are no other people there, that constitutes yichud, even though no one's conscious. It might be that while you're unconscious, nothing to do about it, but that situation is a situation of yichud, and therefore, even though there's no interactions between people, no one's talking to another, no one's interested in another, no one knows each other, that's also a situation of yichud. Okay, let's just add a few points of to describe what the Isser Daraisa of Yichud is. And we're going to have to know when Yichud is Daraisa and when Yichud is Darabanan for the future Shiurim. The reason for that is because whenever Yichud is going to be Daraisa, we're going to sometimes be a little more stringent. Whenever Yichud is going to be more Darabanan, we'll sometimes be a little more lenient. For example, we will find that there are certain questions that will come up that's a machlokas. Is this okay or not? He says yes, he says no. Rav so-and-so says yes, Rav so-and-so says no. So by a yichud that's only midrabanan, we'll be lenient and follow the lenient opinion. By yichud that will be midaraita, we'll be more stringent possibly. So that's why even though this is not practical halacha, whether it's daraita or midrabanan, because either way it's not okay, either way it's aser, be it min ha-Torah or midrabanan, we still have to know for ourselves as we begin learning these halachos, which is which. So guideline number one is that yichud midaraisa is only in a situation where there's one man and one woman. Any situation that might have more than one man and one woman involved, sometimes it's not yichud at all and it's permitted, but there are situations that there's yichud, but it'll only be midrabanan if there's more than one man and one woman. Those details will not be for tonight. That'll be for probably 2 or 3 weeks from now. Another situation, another question about yichud, is it daraisa d'rabbanan? And this is the most important question. This is the most important question for dating. A person who's a nida. So, I read to you this list of arayos. And we talked about sisters-in-laws and brothers-in-laws and daughters-in-laws and uncles and aunts and sons and daughters and mothers and grandmothers. Believe it or not, one pasuk here says the following. After it talks about marrying, a person not allowed to marry two sisters, the next pasuk says, "Ve'el isha b'nidat tumata lo tikrav ligalot ervata." This is the part of the Isser of Nida. It sounds like Nida is one of those lists of arayos that's asur midaraisa. So if you just gave me this chumash, and all I had was this parsha in Achremos, that we read on Yom Kippur, I would assume that yichud of a person who's a nida would be aser Midaraisa. Because in the list with all the others, we said that the primary yichud from the Torah is only the list of arayos. A single girl with a single guy, that's only midrabana, and that's we learned after Tamar and Amnon. Only this list of relatives that you're not allowed to marry. Well, in this list of relatives that you're not allowed, who you're not allowed to marry, is a case of anida. So that would indicate that anida would be aser d'oraisa. On the other hand, we find some indications that maybe Nida is different from all the other in-laws, aunts, uncles, sons, grandmothers, daughters, etc. That maybe Nida is less severe. Why? Because, let me ask you a question. Let's say I take a ring. Here. No, I don't wear a ring. No, I don't have a ring in my pocket, but my key ring. Okay? I take this ring, and I go over to my sister. Okay? I say, please extend your right forefinger, and she does, and I feel very comfortable saying this because I have three brothers. So, she extends her right forefinger, and I place this ring on her finger, and I say, Harei at mekudeshet li b'tabat zu kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. Are we married? Are we married? Absolutely not. If I place this ring on my married aunt, of course not. But let's say I have an aunt, my father's sister. My father's sister, I just have to double check. I think so. Let's assume my father's sister. I place this ring on my father's sister. She's not married. If she's married, of course it wouldn't. You can't be married. A woman can't be married to more than one man. But she's a single person. I marry my father's sister. Is she married to me? Absolutely not. Why? Because the rule is that all the arayot, these strong... this list of the severe sexual immoralities, there's no tfisat kiddushin. Kiddushin, marriage, will not be effective between me and that person. However, what happens if at a wedding the kala is anida and the chasan puts the ring on her finger? You know what? She's completely married. So that means there is kiddushin that can happen. There is marriage that can work while a woman is anida. So that means that anida is not in the regular list of these people. Yeah. That is true. That yichud will be prohibited. But marriage will work. So we're trying to figure out now that yichud that you're saying is not permitted, is it deraita derabana? That's what we're going to try to figure out. So this sounds like it's not in the list. If it's not in the list, it should only be derabana. If it would be in the list, since it's in the list, it sounds like maybe it should be deraita. We have different sides to discuss and to argue whether Nida should or be Daraita or Yichud for Nida should not be Daraita. And again, this is the most important question for us because in dating purposes, this is the question that comes up. Usually you're not dating your brother-in-law. Usually you're not dating your grandfather. Usually you're not dating your uncle. Usually you're not dating your brother. If you are, please speak to me. We have a lot to discuss. Usually you're dating a person, and usually any woman above 12, we assume, is assumed to be a nida. If that's the case, is that yichud going to be with a person with whom you're on a date, is that going to be deraita derabanan? Well, the conclusion of the poskim, of the majority of the poskim, is that yichud of a nida is midaraita. It is midaraita. That's the conclusion of the poskim. There are different sides to argue on both sides. This is the majority of the poskim's conclusion, that Nida is considered one of this list of arayot that we read on Yom Kippur, and therefore yichud of a Nida with a man, in other words, any situation of a woman on a date, practically, will be, in all normal circumstances, will be aser d'oraita. Yeah.
So even if it's not one-on-one, if one part is
you're right, but you're wrong. Theoretically, you ought to be right. However, there's a different parameter that tells us that in yichud, you could only have yichud if it's one-on-one. Meaning, let's say yichud with my aunt, my father's sister. That's one of the arayot, without any question. So therefore, it's asa midaraita. However, if it would be my aunt and anybody else, and the guy from the shoe store, once it's more than one-on-one, it's not going to be daraita anymore. So these are two separate things to knock it down. Either there's more than one person there, that knocks down, or we're saying maybe if she's not a... Maybe if Nida would be Durabana, that would knock it down independently. But these are two... These work on separate planes. It's a good question. Okay. Now let's talk about children. Yes?
If people are married,
correct. After they've been together for the first time, yes.
Okay.
beforehand, if a woman gets married while she's a nida, that causes a very complicated, uncomfortable situation that all rabbanim are very familiar with and does happen very often, more often than we know. Let me rephrase that. Whenever it happens, no one knows except the chas and the kala, maybe a mother or two, a rabbi, and maybe a very close friend. And if there is a neighbor who has a little kid or a brother who has a little kid, they know. Other than that, no one else really knows. So it's usually less than like 9 people. Something else to daven for. Okay, from what age are we concerned with the question of yichud? Meaning, can I babysit my 2-year-old niece? Can you babysit your 5-year-old nephew? Could you babysit your next-door neighbor who's going to pay you on a Saturday night that you're studying for your exams anyway, while they go somewhere, and you're going to make some money studying for your test? Could you babysit for them if their son is 4.5, or 1.5, or half? What is the cutoff for ages? So here, it's not confusing, but it depends. A boy is prohibited to have nida with a woman from the time that he's 9 years old. A girl, however, is prohibited to have yichud with a man from the time that she's 3 years old. Why the age is different, we're not going to get into. It's a little complicated, but that's what the halacha is. Will it be d'oraita? Meaning, if I have yichud with a 5-year-old girl or a 2-year-old girl? 2-year-old girl will be mutter. A 5-year-old girl, I believe if I'm an adult man and I would have yichud with a 5-year-old girl, I believe that would probably be yichud d'oraita, but don't quote me on that. I'm not sure. Good question. But let's clarify one point. When we say that a boy has to be 9 years old, that means if there's a girl who's bat mitzvah and she's obligated in the halachas of yichud, so a bat mitzvah is obligated in the halachas of yichud, can babysit a boy who's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Once he's 9, she can no longer babysit for him. And conversely, a man who wants to babysit for his niece when she's 1, it's fine. When she's 2, it's fine. Once she's 3, it's prohibited for me to babysit my 3-year-old niece. That's talking about me being a bar mitzvah, you being a bat mitzvah, watching a little child. What about somebody who's not bar mitzvah? Let's say you have an 11-year-old babysitter. She babysits for all the little kids in the neighborhood, right? I live in Washington Heights, and all of the families in this area on the YU side have little kids. No one here has a kid past, I don't know, 5th grade, 6th grade. So the oldest person in the neighborhood is a 10-year-old girl. So could I have the 10-year-old girl babysit my... No, that's not going to work. Let's do it the opposite way. It's going to be a little awkward. Could I have my... These are confused. This is where it gets confusing. Can I have my 10-year-old boy... Who would trust anybody baby with a 10-year-old boy? Okay, but theoretically, I have a 10-year-old boy. Can my 10-year-old boy babysit his 4-year-old next-door neighbor? But she's 4 already. The cutoff is 3. Thank you. Correct. That is right. Since he's not bar mitzvah, he's not obligated in the halachas of yichud. The Maharshal tells us that the halachas of yichud do not apply to ketanim, to children. Which comes out with an incredible kula that, I don't know, it felt wrong, but it's mutter, l'chatchila. A 12-year-old boy and an 11-year-old girl. Mutter or aser? It's mutter. It's mutter. 12-year-old, right? What grade are we talking about? 7th grade boy and his 6th grade girlfriend, and they're locked in a room together for 5 hours. Mutter or aser? All together now. Mutter, yes. Okay, it's not me, it's the Maharshal. We could rely on the Maharshal. He has a lot of chumras in other areas that we'll worry about when we get, you know, we could take his clues. Okay. Yes. Okay, you're going to have to come back another week. Well, again, when we talk about for numerous people, there are a lot of questions. First of all, it's how many. Second of all, it's maybe at an age that they're sort of, that they'll tell later. Like, if anything would happen, I think an age would be, let's say, a 7-year-old. A 7-year-old sort of knows it's flying, but not enough. And if anything happened, the 7-year-old would definitely tell everybody he knows, right? Fine. So that also, those are the two issues. How many people there are, and besides that, if there's a certain age, I'll prepare for that shiur, that we assume they just talk a lot. So even if it would be just one person, or that person is a talking kid, we'll save you. Okay, so again, if you have you want to babysit for your 8-year-old nephew, it's okay. Your 9-year-old nephew, it's usser. Fine, we did that. Now, another kula. Another one, which is really two very important kulas that Rebbe Yashiv from Eretz Yisrael teaches us. We mentioned 2 minutes ago that a child is not obligated in yichud. Well, who else is a category of a person who's not obligated in the halachas of yichud? Other than a child. No? What? I'll give you a hint. She speaks Spanish. A guy. Right. Okay? A guy is not obligated in the halachas of yichud. How do I know that? Because it's not one of the 7 mitzvos. Well, you could argue maybe so. Gilei Arayos is one of the 7 mitzvos of Bnei Noach, but no, they're not obligated in the halachas of yichud. So therefore, if you have a guy who wants to have yichud, let's say me, I want to have yichud with a goyish woman. Is that permitted or not? She's not obligated in the halachas of yichud, but I am, right? How do I know that I am? Because we learned 20 minutes ago that Hillel and Shammai made a gzera. That was step number 3 historically. Hillel and Shammai made a gzera that I can't have yichud with a guy. Okay, now drop my age by a third, and I can't give away how old I am, right? Let's say I'm 11 years old, 12 years old. So above 9, so there is a halacha of yichud with a person above 9, and a guy, and Mariana, or Huli. Yulhulina, I need some more. I'm not. Could my maid, my cleaning lady, my babysitter, who comes from DR, babysit my 11-year-old son? Well, is my 11-year-old son obligated in Yichud? No. Is she obligated in the halachas of Yichud? No. So therefore, Yichud is permitted. So what happens when you have a 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old son and you want to go on vacation? Who do you have to hire? Only a non-Jew to babysit. Unless you get a guy, but what guy is going to be willing to babysit? I remember vaguely, I have vague recollections. I'm trying to think how old I was. I guess old enough that I couldn't stay home by myself, but young enough that I couldn't stay home by myself, but old enough that I would never be willing to have a female babysitter. I guess, I don't know, I was in fourth grade, fifth grade, and there's a guy down my block, an older fellow, who's like a professional. But there's no one else in the neighborhood who could babysit for me. So he came here and we had a great time together. He came by, drank hot cocoa, I don't know what we did. But it was very not typical babysitting, but it was fun. And let's talk about the inverse. Let's say you have and it's incredible that this is mutter, because you'd think, oh my gosh, how could this be? You have an 11-year-old girl. Is she obligated in the halachas of yichud? No. You have a 21-year-old man who's not Jewish. Is he obligated in the halachas of yichud? Yichud is mutter. It's permitted. A 20-year-old non-Jewish man with an 11-year-old Jewish girl is permitted, says Rebbe Yashiv. Fascinating, frightening, but mutter l'chatchila. What?
You don't have to let it happen.
Yeah. I'm not saying you should do it, but at least in terms of the halachas, whatever the situation could be, obviously, finally, one other application of another person where yichud is permitted, and this might be more nogea to people who are nurses, people who are maybe OTs sometimes. If there is a very elderly man who's clinically impotent, physically he's not able to live with a woman, physically, so he's not able to do it physically. So because he's considered not roi libiya, he's not able to have an intimate relationship with a woman physically, there also yichud will be permitted. Therefore, if there's a nurse who's working in geriatrics, if there's a nurse who's working in hospice care, and it's known that the man that she's working with is physically impotent, she will be permitted lichatchila to be locked in a room with him for night shift without any problem. If he's an elderly man but not impotent, there we'd get into serious shilas, and if that comes up, speak to a rav, and we'll talk about some guidelines in the next few shiurim. That's what's much more common. Yeah. Same thing, correct. Right, it's not a function of elderly. Yes, any man who's completely impotent would be permitted to have yichud with. Yes. Any other questions? No. I'm just saying the applications are mostly in a professional setting, but no, it would be permitted even without the professional aspect, which is normally make. Yes. Assume it's usur unless you know from the medical records that it's permitted. Meaning normally it's usur. If you have medical, you know, you can check. Okay, that's ages, that's goyim, that's elderly. Let's talk about what is the minimum amount of time that is necessary to constitute yichud. The famous elevator question. That's what we're going to talk about now. Before we get to the elevator question, which has some very interesting applications and a good story, we have to know that there's another yichud that's written in the Torah. Besides the yichud that I told you about, where the Torah says that you might be secretly talking to a person who's trying to convince you to do avodah zarah, there's one other area of yichud in the Torah. And that's in the story of a sota. A sota is an, I don't want to use the word unfaithful wife, because that's not correct. It's a wife who's accused of being unfaithful. Whether she is or isn't, that's going to depend on what the outcome will be. But a woman who's accused of being unfaithful, what does it take to make a woman a sota? The husband has to do two things. A, warn her, saying, "My dear wife, I don't like the way you're winking and being winked at by so-and-so. I don't want you to hang around with so-and-so." That's step one. That's called kinui, from the word kina, jealousy. He's jealous for a certain man. And B, she then subsequently has to be found to have yichud with that specific man. Nothing happened between them. We don't know that anything happened, and maybe nothing did happen. If the woman got the warning from her husband and then was in a situation of yichud with that man that her husband warned her against, those two ingredients make a woman a sota. Now there, the Torah, the halacha, the gemara is clear on a lot of parameters of what is the nature of that yichud. What is considered that yichud that qualifies to make a woman a sota? Which we don't have to know all those halachas for now, but there the gemara tells us how long they have to be together in the same room to qualify as yichud that will make her a sota. What's the amount of time? And this is going to be hard to swallow. The amount of time is the amount of time that it takes to roast an egg and swallow it. To roast an egg and swallow it. And eat it. That's the amount of time that the Gemara... Why? It could be because the Gemara didn't have seconds and minutes. I don't think it has anything to do with roasting eggs. I don't think it has anything to do with eating eggs. I think there's a great challenge when you're trying to measure a certain amount of time for something. You don't have a yardstick, you don't have a measuring stick, you don't have minutes, you don't have feet. So you have to sort of give things that are somewhat objective, like everyone knows that it takes, again, the word 20 seconds didn't exist. The word 3.5 minutes didn't exist then, in terms of the way we measure it now, I think. Maybe it did on some level. So they had to figure out some things that households were familiar with. Everyone knows how long it takes to roast an egg. Everyone knows how long it takes to swallow an egg. So if you put those two together, that's the amount of time that we could assume that something could have happened, something inappropriate could have occurred between this man and woman while they were together. Now, how long does it take? Are we talking about a minute or are we talking about 20 minutes? How long does it take for a man and woman to violate being with one another? So we're going to find the range in the poskim. We'll talk about three opinions, starting with the most stringent. There's a sefer called Dvar Halacha. Dvar Halacha is a sefer that only exists on Hilchas Yichud, and it's the Bible of Hilchas Yichud. It was written probably within the past 30, 40 years. Somebody who learned Hilchas Yichud with a Stipel Gaon. Some of you have heard of the Stipel Gaon. And based on the different shiurim, or time spans, that the different achronim give to describe how we measure the time span, that's the minimum time for Yichud, he did experiments, and he did time and again, took the averages, and he came out saying that once it's 35 seconds, you're in trouble. Less, let me rephrase that. Less than 35 seconds is definitely okay. That means being somewhere alone, secluded, a man and a woman, for 35 seconds, says the Dvar Halacha, you're in trouble. Again, he's not positive that 35 seconds is going to be asr. He just knows that less than 35 seconds is definitely mutter. Once you get to 35 seconds, you enter the range of problematic, the problematic area. Rabbi Yashiv is a little bit more lenient. Rabbi Yashiv says, up to a minute is definitely not yichud. B'sha'as hadchak, if it's a tough situation, you even have a minute and a half. More than that, we're worried that there's yichud. And then, we have something that changes the whole picture on its head. Comes Rav Moshe Feinstein and raises 2 points. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, when the Gemara said that the amount of time that they have to be together is the amount of, that we could be worried that something happened between the two of them, is to roast an egg and to swallow an egg, that's talking about the act of being together itself. But says Rav Moshe Feinstein, there's also time that it takes for them to get undressed beforehand, for them to get dressed properly afterwards so that they could, you know, go back, walk outside and pretend that nothing happened afterwards. And that's going to add on, let's say the real shear, the real time span is really 35 seconds or whatever it is, or a minute and a half. But you have to add the time before and after, another few minutes, for them to get dressed, undressed and dressed. And listen to this, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. How could we learn the source for the time span of Yichud from a case of Sota? What are the two ingredients of a sota? A, her husband said, I don't like the way he winks at you, and you wink at him. And B, they have to have yichud together. That means when they had yichud, who's having yichud there? A man and a woman who are a little too friendly, if you know what I mean. A little too friendly. So yeah, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, there all we need is the amount of time that it takes to actually be together. But any other situation where the people are not so friendly together, or even inappropriately friendly, then not only do you need the time to get undressed and dressed, there also has to be the amount of time to seduce one another in order that something prohibited can occur. So according to Rav Moshe, there are no straight numbers. But the time for yichud will be a composite of the amount of time it takes to get undressed, and the amount of time it takes to be together, let me rephrase that. The amount of time that takes to seduce, plus the amount of time that takes to get undressed, plus the amount of time that takes to be together prohibitedly, plus the amount of time that it takes to get dressed afterwards. Is that 10 minutes? Is it 15 minutes? Is it 20 minutes? Is it half an hour? Is it 40 minutes? That all depends on the situation, and we don't have a clear number. I will not be honest if I would say that it's clear that we follow Rav Moshe Feinstein. Meaning, although it makes a lot of sense, a lot of the postmen don't like it. So, practically, it's not so important, and I'll tell you why. We'll finish off with one more point after this. But practically, the time span that Yichud takes never comes up, with one exception. Before I get to that exception, I'll tell you why it never comes up. Let's say, and this happens to me at least 3-4 times a year, I'm going home. I live right here on 186th Street, off Amsterdam, and I come home for lunch or for something, or I have to drop. Let's say we have a cleaning lady. Thursday morning we have a cleaning lady, and my wife forgot to leave money for her on the table. I have to go home, leave the money on the table for her, and go back to whatever else I have to do, wherever I have a meeting during lunchtime, or have a chavrus, or whatever else it is. So I go into the house, I give her the money, I put the money on the table, I grab something from the refrigerator, I take a drink, and I walk outside. Let's say I walk into the house, and this happened at least a few times. Walk into the house, I take money, put it on the table. As I'm at the fridge, what does the cleaning lady do? Shuts the door and locks it. Meanwhile, I'm at the refrigerator, and I'm taking a drink, and I'll be out within 50 seconds. Within 34 seconds, let's say. Okay? So, it's less than even the most stringent shear, it's less than 35 seconds. I'm good according to all opinions, right? The answer is wrong. Why? Because right now I am in a situation that as things are, meaning if we maintain status quo, it could continue forever. I'm locked in a room with a woman, and that's yichud. When is it important to know what the time span for yichud is? when the situation is such that you're only going to be secluded for 35 seconds, for a minute and a half. Where does that apply? And basically only in one place? Not even? Thank you. The elevator story. In an elevator. Why? Because there you know that the doors are going to open up within the next 20 seconds. But right now you're locked with a man. No one else is coming in. You're locked between floors 2 and 6. Or 4, or whenever else the doors are open. You're locked in there. If that happens, then you didn't have a choice. You're right. You could get stuck in there, and it's, that would be usser, but you're an honest.
Sure
you can't help it.
Say don't, because you might get stuck in the elevator.
Okay, so we'll see that that's not that's permitted. Halachically, that's permitted. If you want to be machmer, you know, you can be machmer about a lot of things, but that's not halacha. But you're right. You don't have to be worried about that. So this is a situation that you're entering. You're locked in an elevator with a man for 20 seconds. So here, let's look at what is the time span? Am I locked in for 20 seconds or a minute and 20 seconds? Well, if I'm locked in for 20 seconds, it's mutter entirely. If I'll be locked in for a minute and 20 seconds, that's going to be much more complicated. Now, story. When I went on my very first date in my life, I went to Toronto. None of you know who it is, so don't worry. My wife is from Toronto. She's not my very first date. A different Toronto girl. I went to Toronto. Now, if you've been going to Toronto for the first time in your life, anyone here from Toronto? Where would you take a guy the first time that he's in Toronto? CN Tower, thank you. Correct. Okay, so we go to CN Towers, and it's about 10:30 at night. It's still open, but there aren't too many people there. It's busy during the day, a lot of tourists. It's the tallest building in North America, in the world. I don't know what it is. Okay, so there is an express elevator that takes you from floor 0 till floor 123. How long is that? 3 minutes? 2 minutes? It's definitely more than 35 seconds. It's even more than Rebbe Yashe's minute. And it's more than Rebbe Yashe's minute and a half, which he lets you have in cases of, you know, tough situations. B'shas Adchak. So I look at her, and she looks at me, and we sort of realize that there aren't too many people online. And we weren't sure if we'd be the only people in it, or we wouldn't be the only people in it. So what did we do? I never got to see the CN Tower. Of course, we had the option of going up separately, but, you know, just on a date. That just... So, what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is that if you're in a situation where it could continue, and continue, and continue, and continue, then even though your plan is only to be there for a few seconds, I'm just going to get something from the fridge and run outside, it doesn't matter. Right now I'm locked in a room with a woman. That's prohibited. However, if the situation itself will only be existent for 30 seconds, well, since the situation will only be for 30 seconds, and 30 seconds is not a sufficient amount of time for anything to happen, that will be permitted. Let us finish with one important point, and we'll go on with next week. Let's just finish with who is clear that you're allowed to have yichud with. Person's allowed to have yichud with her. A woman's allowed to have yichud with her father, with her son. What about grandfather and grandson? Okay, who says yes? Who says it's permitted? Who says it's aser? Who doesn't say? Okay, the halacha is that it's mutter. What about great-grandfather and great-grandson? Also mutter. Yes, all the way. Great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-great-grandson. And their grandmother, granddaughter, whatever it is, mutter. And the inverse, of course. If you have a mother and her, you get the point. All the grands and etc. are all mutter. A sister and a brother are mutter, of course. A husband is mutter, of course. However, and this is something that probably very few of you know, which when I learned about it was a little bit surprising. It is mutter for you to have yichud with your brother. A sister could have yichud with her brother. However, the Gemara says that this is only arai. This is only for temporary purposes. However, if a brother and sister move into an apartment together, and they're there bekvius, the Gemara does not define what the word bekvius means. Bekvius means in a set way. The opposite of temporary is permanent. Thank you. In a permanent way, that is prohibited. What is permanent? The Gemara doesn't say. In general, it happens to be that whenever we have the idea of permanent in halacha, it's usually 30 days. So it's going to come out that that's what the poskim assume, that a brother and sister should not move into the same apartment for 30 days. This could sometimes be a little bit difficult, especially if you're like before college, after college, didn't find work yet. These kinds of situations do definitely arise, and it's good to be aware of them. We'll finish with one interesting thing which I heard this afternoon from my chavrus. I told him that I was going to speak about this. And he said that he remembers when he was going for smicha at YU, Rabbi Sobolovsky gave shiurim on Hilchos Yichud. Rabbi Sobolovsky said in another situation, I don't know if any of you have brothers who are a little like, don't really know what they're doing with their lives. I'm sure there are some people who do, maybe not here. Let's say you have a brother who just finished college, but he doesn't know if he's going to go to graduate school or go to work. Maybe he'll go to smicha, maybe he'll like tour, you know, the Sahara Desert. He's not really sure what he wants to do with his life. But meanwhile, you have a bed in your apartment, or one of those couches. So hey, he'll crash into your apartment until he figures out what he's doing with his life. Well, Rabbi Sobolovsky pointed out, is this temporary or permanent? I mean, you certainly hope it's temporary. But for some reason, he put his clothes in the drawers, and he hung up his suit, and he looked very comfortable. So here again, the Gemara never gave us a number of days, just said permanent versus temporary. Permanent is prohibited, temporary is permitted. So here, if we have a guy who's your brother who's crashing at your apartment, and he doesn't have a plan, he doesn't know what he's doing, he doesn't know if he'll be there for 3 days, or if he'll be there for 3 months, or 3 years, hopefully not, well, that might be considered permanent from the day he moves in. Why? Because he doesn't have any plans, and he unpacked. So that's just something to think about. Be'ezras Hashem, in the next few weeks, I hope we'll continue. I assume, is Monday night okay for people? Theoretically? Okay, if at some point we see that a different night will work better for the vast majority, we could talk about changing the days, but assume Monday nights at 8:30. We'll try to have the transportation. Hopefully, thank you for reminding me today. Just to give you an outline of what will be in the next few shiurim, basically all of Hilchos Yichud could be divided up into what we did today, and 4 or 5 leniencies. The 4 or 5 leniencies are an open door, are a husband or wife is around, and that mitigates the yichud on the other party. There's a shomer involved, meaning somebody who you're allowed to be with that saves you from the other situations of yichud, and if you have more than one person. Those are like the 4 areas that make yichud mutter, and each week we'll spend at least 1 week on each of those. Thank you very much for coming. Laila Tov. If you have any questions, you're welcome to come over now.